estimated that about half of the Lord's teachings involve some discussion about money. I've never taken the time to figure that out for myself, so I'm relying on somebody else's review of the New Testament, the Gospels. Certainly, the Scriptures describe a measure of faithfulness and connection with what we do, with what the Lord, as we have just prayed and thought about, what He's blessed us with. And I'm not sure I found any subject among Christians that we get more defensive about. And especially if the preacher is getting ready to talk about it. Any criticism that may come our way, we deflect it pretty quickly. What we do sometimes is compare ourselves with others. Well, I'm not as worldly as he is. He spends more money on this than I spend on this. And so that bantering back and forth goes on in our own hearts, our own minds, and we may still not make any real genuine improvements if improvement needs to be made. Like a lot of criticism sometimes, we get criticized and the first thing we do is look at the person criticizing us, wondering what can I say to them, or examining them. And that's part of teaching others. I'm fully aware of the fact that I think one of the reasons that we ought not be many teachers because there's greater condemnation. I'm not particularly convinced that condemnation or judgment from the Lord. I think it comes from others. Some people won't handle that very well. I don't handle it very well sometimes. So we wrestle with this subject. It will be ongoing in our environment. If we think living in America right now that this isn't something we ought to give some serious consideration to, then I'm afraid we've missed half of the Lord's teachings. We're just studying the part that we feel comfortable with. We're always going to wrestle with needs and wants. I know that. I've told you before, I have read articles that entertainment is now a need. So we got to have it. Got to have television. Got to have cable. Got to have the movies. Got to have the music. We got to have the ball games. We got to have something to entertain us. And so it's now a need. And so when we're trying to figure out our finances, our budget, we have to budget in entertainment. I'm sorry. I don't think that's a New Testament description of a need. But I'm not so sure that there isn't some place to enjoy some of the things in life, that we can enjoy the fruit of our labors according to Ecclesiastes, according to Solomon, his wisdom given to us by the Spirit of the Holy God that we serve. And that's okay. We need to think about that. Not, it's more than okay, but I think we think about being wasteful. And that's good too. There's a tremendous generation gap at Hillview between 80-year-olds and 30-somethings. Because I know what the 80-year-olds experience. I've got a 94-year-old grandmother who believes that she's never had a dime. I was going metal detect in the front of the house one time, and she looked at me like, what do you want to do that? There isn't anything out there because we didn't have any. I found about a early 1900s penny one time that was worth about a penny. It's been in the ground and it's corroded so long that you can forget that copper ever being worth anything. But I know they pinched pennies. And I know there's a time when they lived through the Depression. They had to learn to do that, and they never really let go of that a whole lot. There's always this fear that on the other side there's this tragedy getting ready to happen, and we need to have money laid aside. I understand that. I understand we can be wasteful. I understand there's a place to save. How much should we save? How much should we spend on insurance? How much should we spend on health care? Some of you 80-somethings don't have any idea what health care costs today because, see, your husband worked for a company that they had the insurance built into it. Now, maybe not all of the case. That's got to be part of the experience, because quite frankly, one little illness and put in the hospital would wipe you out financially if you didn't have insurance. Now, it's a big issue in our country. What about long-term health care? We're all living longer than our forefathers, and so what's a nursing home going to cost? Wipe out your savings in a heartbeat if you have much at all. I know those are concerns. So how much do we store? How much do we lay aside? I've got this in my notes, and I've wrestled. I took it out. I put it back in. I took it out. I put it back in. I think some of us have already heard. The word kind of got around, and I think at the end of the day, it makes us smile when you know two old godly sisters that lived together for years and can no longer live in the house, and so the niece goes in, has to clean the house out. We're not surprised, found several thousand dollars in $100 bills. And that was an older generation stuffing that in the, I guess, in the mattress or whatever, because someday you're going to need that. And what happens is someday you're going to die and you're going to leave that money to somebody else. Can we spend too much on stuff? Oh my, I'm completely aware of that. Or sometimes we're trying to find happiness in all the wrong places. Yes, we need to learn these lessons. We absolutely need to learn the lessons of Solomon. We need to study Ecclesiastes. We need to study Proverbs. We need to be reminded of their messages. Is the pursuit of riches a dangerous thing? Absolutely. When that's our aim, when that's our pursuit, sometimes hidden under the guise of improving our situation, bettering ourselves, and sometimes those things get in the way of genuine growth spiritually. We're all familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan. I'm sorry, the good soil, but the different kinds of soils found in the parable of the sower. And Mark's account of that, when Jesus is explaining what this soil was like with the thorns and the thistles and the briars, the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things entering in, choke the word and it becomes unfruitful. We don't do any spiritual good because our pursuit becomes those things. And then 1 Timothy chapter 6, you know these warnings as well. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. I've told you this story many times. I heard years ago as an old Paul Harvey reporting what he had heard, and that was, a survey was done of people that made $10,000 a year and others all the way up to $100,000 at 10,000 increments. And the question was, ask all of that group of, in that surveys, 10,000, 20, 30, on up to 100,000. You know, if you made 10% more, would you be happy? And everybody said yes. So it didn't matter how much you made. You always felt like, if I could make a little more, I'd be happy. Now let me say this. I know some folks that have come in their lives and have done well in their work that are making a good living. That wasn't their pursuit. Not what they were after. And maybe because of the number of things, hard work, the company, particular company they're working for, other things come in view that they've done well. But those folks still have those dangers to be aware of as well. Ephesians chapter 4. And I think Caleb read this in a lesson he did a while back on giving. In verse 28 of verse 4, you ask the question, well, what is the main purpose of work? Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. In that particular text, it is for the purpose of taking care of those who have needs. That can be yourself, your wife, your kids, your mom and dad, your extended family, your brothers and sisters in Christ, your neighbor across the road, or the guy you just happened to go be walking down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho one day, and he's been beaten and left for dead and robbed. That's who our neighbor is, right? I want you to think with me about God's examples. Let's be positive about this and look at some people that God made mention of, and apparently made mention of them for a particular reason. We studied recently in Luke chapter 8 of some women that helped Jesus along the way. Many of these women who had been healed and evil spirits had been cast out of their lives, out of their bodies. Mary Magdalene, one of them. And another one named Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others who provided for him from their substance. God evidently finds it important enough to tell us that when Jesus was traveling, here are some women that gave him of what they had. Unselfish, concerned for their Lord and for those traveling with him. I don't know where they got the substance, where their possessions. I assume their husbands were on board, were supportive of them. Maybe they had some work that they had done and they had their own money. I don't know if they had split checking accounts in their houses or not. I don't know. I say that, and I'll be careful. All the marital advice I've read over the years, by the way, suggests that's not a very wise thing. But anyway, I'll let you work that out. But why did God tell me the story of these women if I'm not supposed to learn something from the story? Hospitality. Oh, wow. Throughout all of Scripture, of men and women taking the time. And that story in Luke 10 of the Good Samaritan is a story of man showing hospitality probably at its highest level. Doing something for somebody else he didn't know, and somebody who might not ever return that favor to him, given the same set of circumstances. In Acts chapter 16, we find after Lydia obeyed the gospel of Jesus, she begged Paul and the others with him to stay with her. If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay. Please do that. And she constrained us. She didn't know Paul before he had taught her. Didn't know these other fellows. But begged him to come. Is that our spirit? That we would beg for the opportunity to serve, to give, to do for others. As one of you were just telling me this morning about an opportunity to do some good for somebody else, and they were kind of, oh, I don't know whether we'll do that or not, and the response, and it's a neat way to think about it, and trying to get other people to think about the good we may be trying to do them, is, are you trying to keep me from doing good for the Lord? Somebody offers to do something for you that's good on their part, you're wise to accept it. That doesn't show a lack of humility at all. Can we be liberal? I want to encourage the church at Hillview to become a liberal church of Christ. Now, some of you are awake. That's good. It is time, by the way, that we quit using those distinctions to describe Christians and churches of Christ. And I'm going to tell you the main reason I think it's time to quit using them, because most of us, the younger generation, are clueless at what those are supposed to mean in a particular context 50 years ago. So let's find something else to describe our differences. Are there differences in churches of Christ in the practice of churches? Yes. Do I think there are churches out there that are using the contribution in unscriptural ways? Absolutely, I do. But let's just say that, rather than say, well, they're liberal and we're conservative. Neither one of those may be necessarily something to boast about. Now, I've said that. That was Sermon 1A. Let's get back to Sermon 1. Sermon 1 is, be liberal. Be generous. Do we want the Hillview Church to be known collectively as a group of individuals who are generous? That's the way the church in the Macedonians, the different churches in Macedonia, perhaps the Thessalonians that we're studying about, perhaps the Philippians as well. We know they were generous with Paul when he was at Thessalonica. Philippians chapter 4. Paul commends these brethren in verse number 2, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And there are other examples as well in Acts chapter 4, when the brethren were selling lands and selling homes in order to be able to give to those and take care of the needy saints in Jerusalem at that time. I still marvel at Acts 11 when Agabus came to Antioch to report that there was a famine coming. In verse 28, and one of them named Agabus, chapter 11 of Acts, stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which has also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, each according to his own ability, determined to send relief to the brethren, dwelling in Judea. And this they also did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Listen, folks, we've got all the technicalities there figured out at Hillview. We know exactly how that ought to be done. Wonderful. Now let's be liberal. Now let's learn to be generous. Now let's learn to be like the Macedonian Christians. Let's be that too. So that will describe us. God will be able to say that about us. I remember my dad years ago saying about one older man who did a good bit of preaching, but was a member of this church and in the business meetings, very reluctant to spend the contribution. And my dad said, I've heard him preach, you can't take it with us. But he sits in a business meeting convincing us that we need to keep a hold of. Frustrated my dad. And I'm glad it did. I'm glad I have that memory of my dad caring about things like that. In Acts chapter 9, how will we be remembered? None of us, by the way, ought to be living in such a way to think about, okay, how am I going to be remembered when I die? We need to just be what we ought to be. As somebody said recently, I read about, we all preach our own funerals. The preacher can get up and say what he wants to say, and some of it may be lying. Some of it may be exaggeration. But the person who lived, they'll tell their own story. And if we know the person, then we'll know that story. I love this story of Tabitha. Well, she had died, but the woman is described as being full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. And I understand that trying to understand what those good works are and charitable deeds and the way she did it, and I would be convinced that she didn't do any of this to be known. She didn't do any of it. She didn't let her left hand know what the right hand was doing. She didn't do this on a street corner. She didn't do it so everybody would praise her at her funeral. But she did it because she loved Jesus Christ. Of course, in the funeral, call it that, all these widows were standing around weeping, showing the coats, the garments, which Dorcas had made while she was with them. Evidently, Dorcas didn't think any of that was a waste of time. And any of the good works that she did, that's what she was remembered for. I guess all of that cost money. I don't know that she was married. I don't know where she got the money to be able to do all of that. Was her husband supportive in all of that? I'll make a point about that in the next point. Will you be remembered at your funeral for the things that you did for others? When Jack Watson died, because I never got to know Jack in his healthier days, I learned a couple of things at his funeral, one I've shared with you before. But it was kind of neat when the fellow doing the speaking asked everybody to stand up that had something in their possession that Jack had made them. And I felt kind of out of place because I'm sitting there and everybody else is standing up. I'm going, wait a minute. Well, I didn't get here in time. I guess that's kind of like Dorcas. Everybody stand up that's got some garment that Dorcas made you. And that's a good thing. Godly women. The description of godly women in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10. This is a humbling description. And I would hope every woman sitting here today and hears this, and forget me, forget that I'm reading it, listen to Paul, forget that he's a man for a minute. It's coming from God. It's coming from the Holy Spirit. Listen to God's description of a woman that could be taken into the number being cared for by the local church. Well reported of for good works. If she's brought up children, if she's lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. Ladies, what do you want to be remembered for? We hope it would be the same things that God wants you to be remembered for. It's not always the case, but I will tell you that I am finding even in churches today, and I say this very carefully, this gets all really out there on the end of opinion. But I'm worried about couples not having children for the reason because of financial concern. I understand that I've met a couple that them having children meant that everybody else is going to have to take care of them. But sometimes we're not having kids because we're afraid it's going to infringe on our lifestyle. I think about the husband. Where's the husband of this widow? He's dead, I know that. But where was he when she was doing all of these good things? You know, in that culture, she probably didn't have a job. So what I find behind the scenes here is a husband that was absolutely supportive of what his wife was doing. I'll tell you all something, guys. Sometimes the best thing we can do with our wives is get out of the way. When I mean get out of the way, get our selfish selves out of the way. Your wife comes to you and says, I'd like to do this. There's that story in the Old Testament where the woman wanted to build a room on the house for Elijah to stay at when he passed that way. I wonder what kind of discussion that was with her husband. Honey, I need to ask you something. Can we talk? I was thinking about building a room out here. And he looks at her like, but I was thinking about buying and, you know, and then, but I find that husband say, you know, honey, I think that's a good idea. Sometimes, guys, we do well to listen to our wives, but sometimes, quite frankly, they're more spiritual minded than we are. Because they have a trait about them that's called mothering, caring. Concern about others. Some of us and our toughness and our macho is, well, they must be in that situation because they deserve it, because they're just losers. We need some care brought into our lives sometimes by our wives. Mark chapter 14. Love this story, and you do too. Jesus is within a few days of being put to death. I get the impression that Mary knew that. They're in the house in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper. She comes in, takes this alabaster flax of costly oil, spikenard. She breaks the flask and pours this on his head. The apostles were typical, I don't want to say it's typical, but they were the guys like Whoa, this is an incredible waste. We could have taken this and sold it for 300 denarii and given it to the poor. And they criticized her. The rest of the story is, and one of the accounts is, that Judas was the ringleader of that criticism. And the only concern he had was, I get more money out of this because it puts more money in the money bag that he had been taken out of all along. And Jesus looks at his own 12 apostles and said, guys, stop it. Leave her alone. 300 denarii. A denarius was typically in the first century a common laborer's day's wage. So if they got off on weekends, maybe not, that's a year's labor. And she's spending this money on Jesus. I may have misused that on occasions. I think there's a place and time for people that we love to spend a little bit on them that somebody else can sit around and take and think that was a waste, that was extravagant, you didn't have to do that, why did you do that? And I've seen guys sometimes that, you know, one guy has done something very nice for his wife, and one man's critical of that, but what he's doing is he's got his back turned to his own wife because he didn't want to see her expression. So we're critical. And that's us. We're the apostles. We're critical. More than praising generosity. Doing good for others. And here we are today talking about the wrong person. We're not talking about her enough. Jesus said she'll be remembered. This is a memorial being told about her. Here's my point today. Spend it on people. Let's learn to spend more money on people, not on things, not on stuff. Let's learn to spend money making memories with people. Sometimes a little bit of that extravagance, maybe a vacation with your family, maybe doing something that other people don't do. Maybe it's doing something like that. Because you're showing your love. My favorite Eagles song, Take It to the Limit. You can spend all your time making money, or you can spend all your love making time. May I suggest to you, and using some liberties with that phrase, take the time to spend on others. It's a way of showing our love. Sometimes spending a little bit of money on somebody, if it's a box of ointment, if it's some hospitality, if it's a piece of clothing, if it's taking care of a need, open your eyes and see how wide they can get to the opportunities that lay before us. And do it today while it's today. I guess part of the motivation for the sermon was early this week I was talking with Alex Hartzell, who's the preacher trainee at Brentwood. Marlon's married to his niece. One of the reasons the discussion came up was he and his wife and the little one, and she's expecting again, we're getting ready to go to Hawaii for about a week and a half. Not cheap to go to Hawaii. His dad's stationed there right now as a general. So he's going to go out and spend some time with family. Alex told me a story that just, wow. He said he was only 11. I don't remember all the, he didn't tell me all the details why this particular young woman felt the need to tell Alex this at such a young age. She told Alex, she said, Alex, live your life today. My father, she said, lived with the goal of retirement. Looking forward to retirement and then having the time and money to do the things he wanted. Died the day after he retired of a brain aneurysm. That young woman had something to say. She looked at him and said, you live today. I'm making this point today is you live today with the money that you have. Spend it on others. Find the opportunity to use it for the good that can be done. It's no surprise to you that I, when that happens, when Betsy and I leave, and I don't want to talk about that very much, I just want us to work together, but I will tell you in my experience here, it's been a good bit of time in hospitals, it's been a good bit of time in nursing homes, it's been a good bit of time in the homes of older folks. Listening and hearing what's important. And I've learned some powerful lessons. Listen to me. I hope we all get to experience old age, at least at some level. What will you want to remember? How much stuff you're leaving behind? Or the good you did with what you had? Now, it may be a wise thing to save $4,000 because you never know when you might need that. But, and I like to do this when Amanda or Nick are here, I get to kid with them a little bit and they appreciate it. Neither one of them anticipate Betsy and I leaving them very much. Sorry, Amanda. Sorry, Ryan. But I want to leave memories. I want to be able to think about the preachers I helped support both in the local church and personally on occasions. I want to think about the hospitality I showed. I want to be able to look in the face of Betsy and think about the love we've shared and had together and times we spent together. I want to be able to think about that vacation or two we've taken out west. As somebody else is like, you know, I've heard guys say, well, I just never took a vacation. Well, congratulations, that's nothing to boast about. But I want to remember those things. And if I don't have a dime, I want to be able to take care of. I know all of that. I still have. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? And I guess all of us at that point may be wishing we'd done a little bit more. But I want you to die happy. When you get that chance, I want you to die happy. Not because you've got a lot of stuff you're leaving behind. Big bank account, a lot of collectibles. I want you to leave behind memories for your family. But I want you to die at peace with yourself. I want those memories to be happy. Solomon was more than we have ever thought about having, I guess. And it seems like he came to this, and this is what God's telling us, me and you, try to come to this sense before it's too late. And listen to Solomon. We said, therefore I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Then I hated all my labor in which I toiled under the sun, because I leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. Listen to all of us apparently think we're the exception to that. That was Solomon, not me, because I'm more spiritual minded than Solomon. Baloney. We're just not listening to him. So we're going to die with regret, sadness, and hurt because we didn't use our money in the way that would glorify God, been a blessing to others, and would have brought us the greatest happiness. Do I need this? Oh my. And I'm trying to tell young people this now. What I've learned here, a couple, three occasions, particularly spiritual, how much spiritual things meant to people as they knew their days were few. God's saying, you got a chance right now at 56 years old to figure that out, Lee, if you haven't figured it out already. You got a chance at 35 to figure that out right now. That when you get close to death, if you've got any conscience left that hasn't been hardened by stuff and riches and things, that's what will be important to you. I want to close with this passage that I think is a pretty neat picture. You ever been robbed? You ever had anybody break into your house? That was an occasion for a big party, wasn't it? Just made you the happiest person in the world. No, that's not what happened. A lady lives about three houses up from us. Earlier this year, I was out walking, and she stopped by and said, have you noticed anything going on at your house? And I said, no, I haven't. She said, well, we come home the other night, and a nice, neat circle in the window. I guess somebody had one of those glass cutters, you know. The guy's pretty good at it. Cut that circle out so they could reach through and unlatch. But apparently it was double pane, so apparently he decided he'd stop. And they did have a security system out front, so apparently scared them off. So that's all that happened. But just scared her. And it just, I hear people think, I just feel violated. They came in and took my stuff that I've worked hard for. And I understand that feeling. I don't understand it because I quite frankly haven't had it except on a couple of small occasions. I'm laughing because somebody stole a whole box of 8-track cassettes when I was in college. How old am I? But I remember getting in my Mustang and putting my elbow where it usually was at. My elbow went, oh, what is going on? They were gone. Made me mad. I didn't joyfully accept that. Listen to Paul. Listen to the Hebrew writer. Excuse me. Speaking to Christians that were discouraged, he said, for you had compassion on me and my bonds and joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods. Are you nuts? Joyfully accepted the plundering of my goods. That the Hebrew writer uses is just full of meaning. It may be, in some cases, some early Christians had suffered their goods being taken because of whatever persecution they had to face. But the Hebrew writer uses it here and says that you joyfully allowed yourself to have your goods given to somebody else. And he uses this idea of having them plundered. Chew on that a little bit. Think about being so thankful to be able to help somebody else that you would even be able to be joyous when somebody came in and took your stuff. Do we have that spirit? We can't have. May God help us. Lessons to encourage us to use the blessings of God that we often pray about to be a blessing to others. When we do that, we'll die at peace more than we can ever imagine. That's my hope and my goal for all of you and for me. Thank you. Let's stand and sing. Encourage all of us to be faithful to the Lord in whatever we